Hello, and welcome to the Valley Voices podcast. I'm your host, Vanessa Cirillo from New England Public Radio. This is where we share stories originally told live at our Valley Voices Story Slams, produced with our friends at the Academy of Music Theater. On this episode, you'll hear the winners of the fifth slam of the season, held at Hawks and Reed Performing Arts Center in downtown Greenfield, Massachusetts. The theme of the night was Open Road. Our first story is from Karen Fisk. She shares one of her hardest moments as a mom.
Hi, I'm Karen Fisk. The scene kept playing back in my mind again and again. The gravel and the debris as the car went end over end over end. And the old man who sent us flying off the open road. The day began with an ultimatum. Our son Zoe would not sit in his car seat. And it was a state-of-the-art car seat. Once you got that click done, you could send that kid to the moon. Nothing would happen to them. The problem was the click. And if you had walked by me that morning when I was trying to get Zoe into the car seat, you would have thought I was abusing him. He had his back arched and his shoulders twisted, and he was yelling, "No, no, no." Well, I had had it too. At 3 years old, he was actually tall enough and heavy enough to be in a booster seat. So we put him in the booster seat. We clicked up the seat belts, and we were on our way. We were going to a toy wooden boat workshop. And Zoe was in ecstasy at that workshop because they let them use power tools. Not a bandsaw or anything like that, but a power drill. And he made this incredible boat. We had a wonderful day. It was hot and sunny and fun. And as we got back into the car, the only thing we did different was I sat in the back seat to read to Zoe as we went along. I remember looking up in the rearview mirror and smiling at my husband, Andrew, and he smiled back because we had had such a wonderful day. I remember looking over my shoulder and seeing an old man walking along the side of the road. And then it happened. The churning of the gravel and the debris and the car turning, and suddenly the sudden crash and arms pulling me out of the car and yelling for Zoe and somebody putting him into my arms, and then we were in an ambulance and then we were in the emergency room and the nurse was running over to me saying, "Was your child in a car seat?" And I just burst out crying because he wasn't in a car seat and I had no idea if he was okay or not. And then they took us in two different directions to do the first aid they needed to do. The next time I saw Zoe, he was in a hospital bed, hopping up and down in the hospital bed. He had a teddy bear under one arm and a lollipop in the other hand. And I remember thinking vaguely, that's not safe. Him hopping up and down in a bed with a lollipop in his hand. He had a bump on his forehead and his eyes were starting to go black, but you know what? He looked pretty good. But then I realized, where's Andrew? Thankfully, just a few minutes later, the curtains opened and there he was. And he looked shell-shocked, but he looked wonderful. And we went home. And in the next days, I just kept going through that accident. It was so scary. It was so awful. And I think I just needed somebody to blame. And I thought about that old man. I thought, he was some sort of devil. He was a demon who had cursed us and sent us off the road. That's what happened. Just about that time, our landlord stopped by. We lived in a small town, and he had heard what had happened. And as soon as he affirmed that we were okay, he pointed to the ceiling. Above us, there was a young woman who had a little boy. All summer long, I had been trying to make friends with her. The two kids were the same age. I thought they'd have fun together. But she never let me catch her eye. She was sort of a little vacant, really. And the boy kind of trailed along behind her. I actually never saw them engage with each other. It was very strange. He pointed up at the ceiling and he said, "You know, they were in an accident too. When she was pregnant with him, she walked away. But the little boy and the little girl who she was babysitting were killed." Yeah. Everything changed in my mind when I heard that. I thought, oh my, we could have killed somebody. We could have hit another car. We could have hit that old man. And suddenly that man was not a demon at all. If he was anything, he was an angel. Because nobody died that day. Nobody was killed. Everybody was okay. Thank God.
That was Karen Fisk, reminding us to appreciate life a little extra today. Karen learned to love storytelling from her mom, who learned it from her mom, who learned it from hers. If hearing her story had you think about what you'd like to tell on the Valley Voices stage, visit our website, nepr.net/Valley Voices, to keep an eye out for your chance to audition for the 6th season of Valley Voices, coming in February. If hearing her story has you thinking about what you'd tell on the Valley Voices stage, visit our website, nepr.net/Valley Voices, to keep an eye out for your chance to audition for the 6th season of Valley Voices, coming in February. Jenny Powers is our next storyteller, recalling an epic adventure to the Big Apple with her Girl Scout troop.
I'm Jenny Powers. My story begins when three of my favorite things came together: Girl Scouts, bargains, and New York City. So you can imagine how excited I was to find $9 round-trip tickets for $25 from Holyoke to New York City. When I got to the bus stop at 6 a.m., all those little shining second-grade faces were so excited. Only one of the girls had been to New York City before, since her dad and I are museum lovers. And of course, we had a few chaperones and other girls, older girls, tagging along with us. So a good Girl Scout should be ready for adventure. She should be cheerful in the face of adversity. And we arrived, got off the bus, onto the subway to our first stop, which was the Girl Scouts National Headquarters right on Fifth Avenue. You could see vintage uniforms, the original Girl Scout cookie boxes. And you could pick up a phone and you could hear how Juliet Gordon Lowe started the organization in 1912 in Savannah, Georgia. We left there and marched through the streets, the girls singing call and response songs in their little brown uniforms, just perfect. Our next stop was Liberty Island, where the girls took turns standing tall with their fists in the air, emulating the statue, enough to soften and inspire patriotism in the very hardest of hearts. We had planned a fairly short day because they were still in second grade, so it was time to head back to the bus. This is when our problems really started. So one of the older tag-alongs had broken her leg and was in a wheelchair. And if you haven't ridden the subway and the ferry with a girl in a wheelchair, it's a challenge. Then we also hadn't planned to stop at Ellis Island, but we didn't realize how long it would take for all of those passengers to get off the ferry there, and then all of those people to get on the ferry there. So by the time we were getting closer to that subway station to get back to the bus stop, we thought, okay, let's hustle. We hustled those girls down to the South Street station, got them all on the subway, and then we sat, subways run on a schedule, and this one wasn't leaving till it was time. About halfway there to that bus stop, all the moms were looking at our watches saying, this is gonna be tight. We got one of the moms who runs famously in the St. Patrick's Day road race to run ahead and make sure she held the bus. And then I said, okay, girls, let's go. And we ran up those steps. Hopefully, the girl in the wheelchair and her mom were behind us. And we were flying down the street. And if that bus driver would have gone like this, he would have seen half his prepaid passengers running toward him, waving their arms. But alas, he did not. And only the mom, who was a runner, got to see the bus drive away. I blame myself. Only one kid cried. Mine. So so I passed her off. I tried to make arrangements. There were only 26 standby tickets left, which ruined the bargain, because I figured I'd better get those kids home. They got to have their first slice of New York pizza, so they were happy. Then we went over to Herald Square, where some of the girls got to shop in the largest department store in the world. Macy's right there. Then little things started coming out. Polly Pockets, Uno cards, things they had brought to entertain themselves on the bus. Soon the girls were saying, "This is awesome! We got extra time in New York City!" By the time it was time to go back to the bus, even the moms were saying it was great. So we got to that bus stop early. It was over some pretty sketchy train tracks, and it was filled with vermin. However, this opportunity to face a challenge and do it successfully came in helpful when just last year on our pilgrimage to Savannah to see Juliet Gordon-Lowe's home, our flight got canceled. But we talked about it that night and we remembered, and one of the girls sighed happily and said, "Jenny, remember when we got to go to New York City and see those rats?" Thank you.
That was Jenny Powers. Jenny lives in Holyoke with her amazing husband and daughter. Two of her greatest passions are working in museum education and volunteering with Girl Scouts. One of her favorite things to do in New York City is ride the Staten Island Ferry. Want to keep up on what's happening around the region, from storytelling open mics to workshops and everything in between? Join our Facebook group, Valley Storytelling Community. We post our podcast episodes there too, along with audition deadlines for Valley Voices, video from recent slams, and more. And now for our last story, which comes from Phil Simon, who truly blazed a trail across California with his bandmates back in the 90s.
Hi. My name is Phil Simon. The California Highway Patrolman straightened his hat and he looked me in the eye and he said, "Son, it was bound to happen." It was 1993 and we were on tour. It was the first band I had been booking and doing road management for. They were called International Anthem. And I had booked them a 10-day tour to California. And we were driving south from Oregon, and we were heading into the Northern California town of Ukiah when the Ford Econo line that we were traveling in, and there was only six band members and myself and two crew guys, a PA, and two drum sets and a variety of gear. And as we were driving, the van was gripped by an invisible hand on that was grabbing the drivetrain, like, and it made me really nervous, and I was driving, so I pulled into the local mechanic tire shop type of place, and they put it up on the lift, and he said, "Oh man, the whole rear end is shot, and you're gonna have to get another one. It's gonna take about 2-3 days," and I said, "Well, no, this van and these people are going to Palo Alto tonight." And he said, "I don't think so." And I said, "Well, yes, we are." And I said, "Everybody back in the van." And we all piled back in the van and we started. And I don't know how many of you have been to Ukiah, California, but the 5 or 6 miles as you're going south out of there is incredibly curvy and pretty much straight uphill. And I was incredibly tuned into the sound of the drivetrain as I was driving, and much to my amazement, no noises. It's like, this is amazing. And at the top of this curvy hill, you reach a plateau that goes about 10 miles straight as an arrow. I'm like, this is fantastic. And we start driving, and I get up to about 60, 65 miles an hour when that sound returns with a vengeance. So I wrestle the van, Ford Econoline, to the side of the road from 65 miles an hour down to zero pretty quickly. And I put it in a park, and I'm going to get out to assess the circumstance, and I look in the side mirror, and I see fire leaping out of the rear wheel well as the wheel has exited the vehicle. And I turn in, and in slow motion, I scream, "Fire!" At which point, all eight or nine of us exit the vehicle very quickly, and I'm on the side of the California highway when a white pickup truck pulls up very fast, and he screeches to a halt. He grabs a fire extinguisher out of the bed of his truck, and he runs across the highway, and he puts out the fire. Well, we're standing there assessing the situation for a second, and I'm looking up the road back northward from whence we came, and I see smoke coming about up from the field there, and the guy who saved us, he looks up too, and he goes, "That must be where your wheel went." And he jumps into the pickup truck, and he races up the road. And I'm starting to panic pretty good, and he comes back 2 or 3 minutes later, and he said, "Well, the flames are 20 feet tall and 200 feet across, and they're racing across this field. I'm out of here. Good luck." And he leaves, and I watch in both amazement and horror as over the next 10 minutes or so, three fire engines, a helicopter, and two planes arrive to extinguish the fire. Now, when I was a much younger man, I remember being told a story about someone who was driving who had thrown their cigarette out the window and had caused an enormous fire, and that person was presented with the bill for what it took to extinguish this fire. And here I am, I'm about 22 years old, and I'm thinking, this is going to be a heck of a bill. And the California Highway Patrol arrives and says, "Whose vehicle is this?" And my friend Mark, he raises his hand, and out comes the notepad. He writes down Mark's name, and he said, "Who was driving?" And I raise my hand, and he takes my name down, and I said, "Well, sir, this is awfully unfortunate, but I have to say, this was a lie, an accident, and I don't really feel responsible." And he looks at me, and he adjusts his hat, and he said, "Son, it was bound to happen."
That was Phil Simon. Phil lives in Warwick, Massachusetts with his wife and three children. He owns and operates Simon Says Booking, is in the band Rice, and runs the Old 78 Farm Fall Festival. Thank you so much for joining us for the last episode of Season 5. We can't wait to bring you more stories next season. Be sure to subscribe to the Valley Voices podcast on Apple Podcasts and be alerted when we return with Season 6. Leaving us a review will help us grow our storytelling community. You can also find us on Stitcher and at nepr.net/podcast hub. Valley Voices Story Slam is produced by New England Public Radio and the Academy of Music Theater, with special thanks to our Season 5 venues, Gateway City Arts, New City Brewery, and Hawks and Reed Performing Arts Center. Big thanks also to Holyoke Media, East Hampton Media, and Greenfield Media. Thanks to them, you can watch all the stories shared at Valley Voices on our website, nepr.net/valleyvoices. Until then, keep your ears open for a good story, and check out some of New England Public Radio's other podcasts, like Jazz Beat, where longtime Jazz a la Mode host Tom Rainey shares a mix of interviews and musings on all things jazz. Look for Jazz Beat on the NEPR Podcast Hub or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks for joining me for this episode of the Valley Voices Podcast. I'll be back for Season 6 before you know it.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. I love is making music with my friends, and I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again. Going places that I've never been, seeing things that I may never see again. I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again. We road again.